Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. We're also brought to you by Houseboats.com, your home for houseboat rentals on Shasta Lake. Coming up, we'll talk to a former pitcher who spent 12 years in the major leagues, including seven with the San Francisco Giants and the rest with the Pittsburgh Pirates. That would be Ryan Vogelsong. He's going to join us, as well as baseball reporter Ryan Leong. But first, I want to tell you about our favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Ryan Vogelsong helped the Giants win the World Series in 2012 and 2014. He was an all-star in 2011 and the Willie Mack Award winner that year, and he is on the Giants Wall of Fame. These days, he is working with young Giants pitchers in the minor leagues and helping them get to the major leagues. Guys like Tyler Beattie and Sean Anderson, Sam Coonrod, all worked with Ryan Vogelsong before they made it to Oracle Park. On Thursday, I had a chance to have a long conversation with Vogie. First of all, Ryan, a little happy birthday from earlier this week. Did you enjoy it?
Oh, thank you. I did. Played a little golf, so it was a good day.
That is the best way to spend your birthday. I did the same thing. So I know you've been paying close attention to what's been going on with the Giants, and boy, they just didn't have a really good start. And for a lot of people, this has seemingly come out of nowhere, the way they've been playing baseball here for the last month, and really one of the best teams in baseball in recent times. What was your take on the season to this point?
I think you pretty much nailed it. Started slow. In all facets, the pitching started a little slow. Offense was a little slow, and they've come together here, and everything's kind of firing in all cylinders. And you see what you get when that happens, and that's W's. And I know the one thing that we have is we got some guys that know how to play the game and are going to grind, and sometimes that's what it takes.
Yeah, some of those guys are your former teammates. One of them, Madison Bumgarner, is in the news every day because there's all that speculation about him possibly getting traded. And, at this point, Ryan, it seems to me like it would be impossible to trade him. I mean, you've got a team that is in contention. The last thing you want to do is break that up and let go of your best pitcher. What do you think about this whole situation with Bumgarner?
I tell you, the one job I'm glad I don't have right now is the GM of the Giants.
Right.
Because it's a very, very, very tough call, especially one for me. Being such good friends with Madison personally, obviously I want to see him be a Giant for the rest of his life. So I'm biased on it. But it's a tough call. It is I've read some articles and listened to some stuff. And, I see both sides of the fence. Very, very tough call. But I definitely could understand for keeping them because you want to win. And I can understand for trading them and trying to build something for the future as well. But personally, I don't want to see him go anywhere.
I'm guessing that it's no surprise to you that he's able to block out all of the distractions. As he said, he doesn't give a crap about what's going on. I mean, he just focuses on his starts. I don't think everybody can do that the way Mad Bum can.
Not everybody can do it, and that's why Madison is in a different category of the select few that have played this game. And you have to be able to do that. I mean, not just stuff with trade rumors and all that, but bad games and stuff like that, you have to be able to internalize and get ready for the next start. And that's what separates the really good ones from just the okay good ones.
You know, I don't know that it was weighing on you back in 2001 when you got to the trade deadline, or if it was a complete surprise, but you did get traded right before the trade deadline. You went from the Giants to the Pittsburgh Pirates. So what was your reaction to it? How did you handle that whole situation?
You know, I had heard some stuff going around that I was probably going to get moved or had a chance to get moved. But at that point in time, man, I was so young, and I'll be honest with you, I was pretty naive to everything and didn't kind of understand how significant it was to be in certain places at certain times. So it wasn't affecting me much as a player. I think I was too dumb and young to understand it. but when it did happen, it's two sides of the coin. You know, it was very hard to realize that I wasn't going to be a Giant anymore. And obviously, I'd only been in the organization for a couple years at that point in time. But, you know, I had aspirations of being with the same organization my entire career, because my favorite player growing up was Cal Ripken Jr. So I had these aspirations of doing that. And so that was out the window. And then you flip the coin and you go, well, you know, I'm on this Giants team with all these veteran players that are really good, and I'm sitting here in the bullpen and I'm not pitching a whole lot, but I'm on a team that's winning games and going to go to the playoffs. And then flip the coin and you go, well, I have a chance to go over here. The team's not so good, but I'm going to start and get to be on the field and throw the ball a ton. So there's two sides to every story. But as far as distraction for me, I was too stupid to really understand it.
Well, speaking about being young, you have the opportunity to work with some of the Giants' young pitchers as an instructor, and I wanted to go through some of them. The first question is, how much are you enjoying it? You're getting into this now, your second year. Have you learned a lot about working with these young pitchers, about what works and what doesn't work?
I'm not going to say I got it figured out, because by no means do I ever think I have anything figured out as much as even pitching. But I do enjoy it, and I'm not going to say it's easy, but all I'm doing is just passing on information that I have that I learned. So in that aspect, it is kind of easy. My biggest thing I feel like that I can bring to the table is I've been through everything in this game that can basically happen to you as a player. And if this does happen to you, information can I give them to help them get through it faster and make the low points shorter and the good times longer? And that's what I tell all of them. I'm not trying to sit here and brag to you about what I did or what I didn't do or what happened to me, but that's just my way of explaining to you how we're going to get through this situation and get to the other side. So that aspect of it, and seeing guys have great games after we have conversations or talk pitching or talk mechanics, that's the cool part for me.
I would think it's a little bit easier when you have somebody who's similar to you, whether it be in stature or in their approach, as opposed to somebody who might be more unorthodox or you know, a completely different guy. And when I think about somebody who kind of reminds me a little bit of you, it's Tyler Beede. I mean, just because he's that big, tall right-hander who throws pretty hard, and he really has his act together. What kind of interaction have you had with him?
So Tyler and I, have had quite a few conversations. And, we've had mechanical conversations. We've had pitch sequence conversations. We've had just about every conversation you can have as a pitcher. And the last one was just, Tyler, it's time for you to turn into the bulldog that I know you are. Tyler has some of the best right-handed stuff I've ever seen. And, you know, and I think at the end of Tyler's career, we're going to look back and you're going to see stuff that compares with Justin Verlander. That's how much talent I think he has.
Yeah.
As far as being a bulldog, Tyler's got a little bit to go, but he's getting there. And I just finally told him, hey, this is the only thing that's keeping you from getting to the point and be the pitcher that you want to be. And I said, listen, you're a super nice kid and you're a nice guy. And I think you take that on the field sometimes. And I'm like, I'm not telling you have to be like me or be like Madison where you want to kill everybody all the time.
Right.
But I said, at some point in time, you got to realize that these guys that are hitting against you, they want to take what you got. And I said, and you're letting them do it. I said, it's time for you to put your foot down and be the bulldog that I think you can be and start sticking it up some people's butts, and he's done it. And you know, it's not me at all. It's just advice. All I can do is give advice. It's up to the player to take it and put it into play, and he's absolutely done that, and super proud of him. And I text him, you know, every once in a while just to remind him and tell him I'm proud of him, and he's done a tremendous job.
You know, I've interviewed him a few times, and the first thing that comes to mind is that the kid is cerebral. I mean, he's definitely a really smart kid, and like you said, really nice. How do you get to that point where you're the bulldog? I mean, when I think about you, you know, you always had that game face, you know, game day, forget it. I mean, nobody wanted to even look at you. The same thing with Madison. You guys were so locked in before you took the mound. How do you get to that point?
You know, I think it takes getting beat up a little bit for you to get to that point. I think if you come up and you just pitch really good, that you don't realize how much concentration it takes to be very good at the major league level, start in or start out, and day in and day out. And I think it just took Tyler a little bit to understand that how much focus really does have to go into a game. And I think once he understood that and realized what his concentration level has to be successful, he now understands what that looks like. That's the other thing that's a little tough with coaching is there's a lot of stuff that you can tell people and there's a lot of examples you can give them, but until they're in the moment and experience it, they might not understand what you're really saying. They hear the words, but they don't understand what that feels like or looks like until it happens. And I think all the concentration conversations that I had with Tyler in the past, he heard them and was trying to put them in play. But until you get in that moment and understand exactly how much concentration that takes, you don't really understand it until you do it. And I think he's finally getting to that point.
Beedy has been such a big part of this run for the Giants. Same thing with Sean Anderson. They plug him into the rotation, and he's been fantastic. And, you know, he's a very different personality, I think, than Beedy. And a guy who came from a different background where, you know, he was a closer at the University of Florida, turned into a starter. And I did read, Ryan, where you helped him out with his slider, with the visualization, and scouting hitters. Were those the main aspects, you know, that you looked at with Anderson that he needed to work on?
Yeah, you know, all these guys that are up there right now, and this includes Connor Menez, who we saw, you know, last week for a start,
mm-hmm.
they all have the tools, they all have the equipment, and it's just one thing or another to get them over the edge. But the biggest thing is the location of pitches. Trying to get them to understand that the mistakes that you get away with in the minor leagues, you don't get away with in the big leagues, and having perfect execution all the time. And understanding that perfect execution isn't always going to be there, but the ability to do it when you need to and be pretty close to perfect execution is going to translate. And that was the one thing that I talked about with Anderson a lot, was just executing pitches and helping him have mental thoughts to make him make the best pitch. He was kind of the opposite of Tyler, where he had closer mentality all the time, and we had to try and find a percentage level for him to pitch at where he wasn't trying to throw the ball through a brick wall every pitch.
Right.
Especially in the first inning, you know, because the trend with him in the minor leagues was if he got through the first inning, he was going to have a really good game. But if he got beat up in the first inning a little bit, it was going to be one of those days where he had to grind. And so just trying to get him to understand what starting pitching meant and then pitching through the first inning and how it was going to be different every day. I think that's one of those things where he was getting a lot of information on effort level and how much adrenaline he should have going into a start. And my biggest thing with him was, Bud, it's going to be different every game. So someone can tell you that it might, you know, you want to be at 70 or 80% effort level in the first inning. I said, but what if you're already at 80% and now you're trying to pitch at 80 and you're really pitching at 60? I said, you know, this is something that comes with experience and starting games and is understanding what you have that day in the first inning and how to pitch with it in the first inning. So that goes back to one of those things, like it's just you can explain it to them, but until they're in the situation, it sometimes it just doesn't register. But all these guys, they all have the equipment. It's just little things here and there to get them to do it at the next level. And more importantly, they all have the ability to do it at the next level, but consistent starts and consistent outings that help the team win the game.
Yeah, I would think, Ryan, that it's pretty tough. And I mean, I can imagine you can go back to when you were first starting out. Pretty tough when you don't have success early on. You face that adversity to bounce back from it. Yeah, you're learning, but you know, when you pitch and you think that you made a good pitch, and some of these major league hitters, like you said, they're so amazing, they're going to hit the ball out of the ballpark if you make a mistake, especially with the ball the way it is wound so tight. You know, we got the juiced ball as everybody's talking about. So how do you keep your confidence? Because, you know, you may not have that track record, and it's pretty hard to do, I would think.
Right. So one of the big conversations that I've actually been having a lot with a lot of our guys recently, and this includes like guys like Sam Coonrod. I had this conversation with him earlier in the year. It's just I've tried to eliminate the hitter for them and just talk about how it's you against you. It's kind of like your own personal chess match of how many pitches can I make? If I have 25 pitches tonight, how many of those 25 can I make? And it doesn't necessarily matter. Results don't matter. So if I absolutely throw a fastball exactly where I want to, and the guy beats it and hits it over the fence, or it blows him up and he flares one in for a hit, that's still a point for me. You know, just because I made my pitch and it was a hit doesn't mean it was a bad pitch. Excuse me. And I think that's one thing that as pitchers we have to understand and be pretty good self-evaluators. Now, if I hang a breaking ball and that guy takes me deep, right, obviously bad pitch and wasn't what I was trying to do, but I've tried to get these guys to understand that it's you against you. You obviously see the hitter come in there and you know the name on the back of the jersey and you run through your scouting report real quick on how you're going to attack him. But after that, it's how many pitches can I make on this guy? No matter what pitch the selection is, it could be fastball, curveball, slider, change. But I need to execute the pitch where I want to on that certain pitch. And if I get 25 of them that night as a bullpen guy, how many of those 25 can I make? As a starter, if I get 100, how many of those 100 can I make? And if you're up in the 80% of making pitches, you probably had a pretty good game.
I'm glad you mentioned Coonrod, because when you have a weapon like an upper 90s fastball and, you know, and a nasty breaking ball, it's just something that not everybody possesses. So how do you get him to harness his skills? I mean, he's definitely somebody that the Giants are looking at right now, and I'm hoping they can count on him. You know, what do you think about his future?
Yes, Sam's future is as much as Sam wants to have. Sam has got God has blessed his arm in a special way. He has the ability to make pitches and when I say that, I mean location and pitch shape. He can throw his off speed for strikes, and it's not just a get me over type thing. It's something that has some bite to it. And Sam's a worker. One of Sam's downfalls maybe is that he doesn't know when to stop working. And I know a little bit about that because that's kind of how I was too. But Sam's sky's the limit. He just needs to have more consistent outings and more consistent thoughts on the mound to help him make pitches, and it's going to be sky's the limit for him.
All right, last season for Bruce Bochy. I can't believe that. Every time I say it or think about it, it's just hard to believe because he's been such a mainstay and such a great manager, a Hall of Fame manager. Tell us about your best moments with him. I have to figure that when you were named to the All-Star team in 2011, that had to be one of them. But tell us about, you know, just the best moments and the confidence that he had in you.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that you really don't think about too much until it's over with. And I think about the progression that I had as a Giant my second time around and how he protected me early until I gained his trust, and then how he kind of let me go after that. And I think that for me was probably the best thing that could happen. Because it showed me that he, one, cared about what I was doing, and two, then him showing confidence in me made me want to play better for him. And I don't think I don't have the run for that I went on there for three or four reasons. And the way he treated me and the way he handled me was one of the factors that helped me do it. He just is so good with people. And, you know, I tell people all the time that good big league managers are not really always good baseball managers.
Mm-hmm.
We're very lucky in the fact that but Butch is a very good baseball manager, but he also knows how to manage 25 different personalities. And I think sometimes that second phase of managing personalities is more important than the first. And he is as good as it gets at doing both. And, I mean, the memories I have with him, just sometimes just sitting in the office talking about anything but baseball, books or golf or, you know, anything off the board. But I also, great memories of kind of sitting behind him on the bench and listening to the conversation between him and Wotus or him and Rags about situations in the game and how he would always seem to be two or three innings ahead of everybody else. And, or he would say something, and I'd be like, good grief, I didn't even think about that situation. And he was on top of it. So, you know, a lot of great memories with him, you know, both on the field and off. And, you know, I'm excited for him because I know how stressful the game can be and how, nerve-wracking it can be, but I'm also sad for to see him leave.
Yeah, me too. I mean, what a great career. You know, when you go back to that 2012 postseason, just incredible the way you pitched, the way the team came back from adversity each time. How much do you think about that postseason? What do you think you learned from it? Because to have that kind of success, 3-0, 1.09 ERA in that 2012 postseason, it had to be something that you carry with you the rest of your life.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I take from that is how you don't always have to be the most talented team, but if you play together and do the small things for the guy sitting next to you, that sometimes that trumps talent. And, you know, one of my best Butch memories is actually from that playoffs when he gave this amazing speech in Cincinnati. And the worst thing he could have said was, does anybody have anything to say? And Hunter stood up and gave his speech and made Butch's look not so great anymore. So that's probably one of my good Butch memories. But, I mean, it was this – he gave this amazing speech before game three. And I was starting at night, so I was sitting there going, man, this is really good. This is really good. And then Hunter gave his, and I was kind of like, well, that ain't so good anymore. So, but yeah, that playoffs was just the way he handled the team, the way the team handled each other, the way we kind of just refused to lose, and what good players do when their backs are against the wall is kind of, to me, what defines you as a player. And I think 25 of us showed everybody in the world what we were all made of in that run.
When you were at your locker before one of those games, when you were pitching, you're starting, and you guys are facing elimination. I mean, every game is so big in the postseason. What runs through your mind? I mean, you got to be a little bit nervous. I mean, I don't care how good you are or how long you played. You got to be a little bit nervous in those situations, aren't you?
You know, I don't want to sit here and tell you that I wasn't nervous, but before the game, nerves, no. And I'll tell you why. And I don't know if it would have been like this necessarily at any point else in my career, but excuse me, in those 2012 playoffs, I was about as locked in as a baseball player as you could be, both physically, mentally. I was on top of my game physically. I was at the top of my game mentally. And the harder I concentrated on every pitch that I was going to have to make that night, the less and less the outside noise went away, or the more and more the outside noise went away. So when I would step on the field, I was so ready to pitch that game and so focused on what I had to do. I couldn't tell you how many people were in the stands. You know, if it was game six or game three or whatever, it was just about one pitch at a time. And back to what we talked about earlier, I knew I had 100 and so pitches, and I was going to try and make the 110 best pitches I could make and just trust that was going to be enough. So, you know, nerves the night before, you know, thinking about the start, absolutely. And it was more, more fear of letting your teammates down and then also letting the city down. You know, you feel like in those situations, you feel like you have the whole city riding on your back. And I found out that I really like that feeling. But yeah, it's just a focus thing that really makes everything else go away. And, but I was in the right spot in my career at the right time, and everything kind of came together for me.
All right, Ryan, I really appreciate the time. The last thing before I let you go is, what's next for you? I mean, I know you're enjoying this role right now. What have you thought about as far as the future?
I'm kind of enjoying what I have right now. I haven't really thought too much down the road yet. I still have a couple more trips here this season, so I'm just kind of focused on, trying to get the most out of these minor league kids as I can get out of them before they're done for the season here and they go home for the winter. And that's about it. It's for me, it's just about trying to make an impact on the guys that I can make an impact to, because I've come to realize that you can try and impact all of them and you're not going to. So you try to impact all of them, and the ones that take it in, you hope they run with it in the right direction. And just try and make them as good as I can and try that for the next month. And then it's kind of really out of my hands. It's kind of up to the Giants. If, they feel like I'm an asset and need to be around, then I'm sure I'll be back next year. And if not, we'll go in a different direction.
Would you like to be a full-fledged pitching coach, maybe a future manager, another Bud Black out there, a pitcher who becomes a manager?
I don't know if I'd ever want to manage. I think that's a whole lot of media time that I don't think I'd be real good with. A major league pitching coach someday, absolutely. I would love to be a major league pitching coach someday. When that time is, I really don't know. I know my son's going to be 10 this summer, and I still have some time that I need to spend here with him. But at some point in time, I would love to have the shot to be a major league pitching coach and try and impact some guys and help them through things that I had to get through and try and get them to put a trophy over their head like we did.
Yeah, I think you'd be great in that role. Well, Ryan, thanks so much again for the time. Really appreciate it, and look forward to catching up with you again down the road.
All right, bud. Thanks for having me.
That's former Giants pitcher Ryan Vogelsong. Coming up, another Ryan. Ryan Leung, baseball reporter here in the Bay Area, will be our guest right after this. When it comes to Giants baseball, family memories are created one summer at a time. And the same can be said for your family vacation. How about an experience you will never forget? Shasta Lake is one of the most beautiful places to visit in California, and there is no better way to experience it than to rent a houseboat from houseboats.com. Jones Valley and Silverthorne Resorts are located on the Pitt River arm of Shasta Lake, unquestionably the very best area of Shasta Lake, and houseboats.com will set you up there with rentals ranging from the finest and largest houseboats available for rent in California to entry-level models for small groups or those new to houseboating. Houseboats.com has the best service, the best boats, and the best locations. Let's get that vacation planned. Call 877-468-7326 or go to houseboats.com today. We'll catch up with Ryan Leung in just a moment. I have something on my mind, though, that I wanted to pass along. If you're a Giants fan, I think you need to hear this. I listen pretty much every day to the Buster Olney Baseball Tonight podcast, and he does a great job on this podcast and love his guests. One of them, Keith Law from ESPN, was on there today, and they were talking about the possibility of trading Madison Bumgarner and a little bit about the Giants' chances of making the postseason. Let's listen to Keith Law, and then I'll tell you my thoughts.
I think that the public reaction to them trading Bumgarner would be very poor right now. This Giants team is not actually that good, though. They've been outscored. They've been outscored on the season. It's really unlikely that they're going to make the playoffs. Joe Sheehan wrote about this in his newsletter, his email newsletter yesterday, too, and talked about how the various sites, Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus, have the Giants' playoff odds as extremely low. It's probably a mirage. It's probably, in some sense, the worst thing for Farhan, where I'm sure he would love to just trade all of the assets on the major league roster and continue to rebuild the farm system and accelerate the rebuild overall, and maybe feels like he can't necessarily do so. The flip side is, so back to your point, what if they put Bumgarner out there and they just don't get good offers for him? I mean, he's not the pitcher he was obviously 5-6 years ago. And there are a lot of other, maybe better starting pitcher options. I mean, if you have the chance to trade for Bumgarner or Marcus Stroman, I think I'd take Stroman. Certainly for the, if I'm thinking just who helps me more the rest of the season, I'm almost certainly taking Stroman in that situation.
All right, that's Keith Law from ESPN on the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney on Thursday. Now, I tweeted Keith because I wanted to debate him just a little bit. I mean, I told him that I enjoyed his work. And I do feel that maybe I'm a little too close to the situation because that's what I said in the tweet. But I do think the Giants have a decent chance to make the postseason. I mean, they had a nice run, you know, 17 wins out of 20 games. They get to within 2 games of the wild card. I don't see why they wouldn't think that they don't have a good chance to make the postseason when you play that kind of baseball. As Keith points out, yeah, they've been outscored. But my point is that they still win the close games, and I think that's actually more important in some ways. I mean, you think about it, how many runs do you score in a blowout as the opposing team? Why is that so much more important than the games that are close that the Giants have been winning? And plus, as I pointed out to Keith Law, Johnny Cueto is waiting in the wings. And if Johnny Cueto is part of this staff in September, that's kind of like trading for a really good pitcher. But Keith Law, his response to me was, nope, winning close games isn't as indicative of team talent as runs scored slash allowed. So he is really into the scored versus the allowed runs. And I get it. I still think the Giants have enough talent to get to the postseason. I think it's a very mediocre National League, and the Giants could get there into that wild card. All right, let's hear the conversation I had on Thursday morning with Bay Area reporter Ryan Leong. Well, Ryan, the other Ryan Vogelsong, man, he was outstanding. And just listening to him talk, I have to believe that he would be a great pitching coach. And I think the Giants should act and put him in there in the minor leagues as a full-time pitching coach. What do you think?
You know, I agree with you. I mean, why not? I mean, you have so many guys now that are in the major leagues that are managing or coaching that had no previous experience. I mean, the one that comes to mind right as you mentioned this to me is Rocco Baldelli. He's managing the Twins to one of the best records in baseball. I feel old. I remember when he was a player and he was supposed to be this great, you know, possible future Hall of Famer for the Tampa Bay, at the time, Devil Rays, and it didn't happen.
Well, you know, we were talking at length about Bruce Bochy and how special he is as a manager. And you just wonder, where are the Giants going to go after this season with their managerial position? And we'll talk about what's going on this season because, you know, it's a great run right now. But with Bochy, you know, how do you replace a guy like that?
I mean, it can be done. I mean, it certainly is going to be difficult. I mean, you know, guy wins 3 World Series in 5 years and definitely cemented his place in Cooperstown for sure. And prior to this season, I mean, he kind of looked like he was heading off into the sunset for certain the way the team was going. I mean, after making the playoffs in 2016, you know, as you may recall, Joe, they had the best record in baseball the first half, but they basically almost collapsed in the second half of the season, and they've struggled ever since until this year. But yeah, Bochy certainly one of the great managers in the game, and he's certainly one of those old-time managers. He doesn't look at the analytics. You know, he doesn't manage like that. He manages by his gut, and that certainly is going by the wayside. I have a feeling that, you know, general manager Farhan Zaidi is going to, you know, pick somebody certainly younger. I mean, I don't know if he's going to pick somebody like a Matt Williams, for instance, or somebody in that ilk, but, you know, probably somebody who's a lot younger, probably somebody in their 40s, and someone who definitely follows the analytics of baseball like an Aaron Boone.
This has been a bizarre season, Ryan, so far. I mean, you know, you look at the beginning of the season, and there weren't high expectations for this Giants team, and they were pretty much playing out the way that we thought. They weren't going to be a winning team. They really weren't hitting at all. The batting averages were just abysmal. And then all of a sudden, they flipped the switch, and it's not one player. I mean, you can point to Alex Dickerson a little bit, you know, as being one of the main guys that came in and sparked them, and, you know, a guy like Mike Yastrzemski, but it did seem like all of a sudden they kind of shocked the world here with the way they've played in the last month. What's your take on it, being that you've been in the clubhouse for a lot of these games after the game to kind of see the change of this team?
Yeah, there's certainly, I think because there wasn't much of an identity, there certainly wasn't anything like a carryover, like for instance having a Barry Bonds on the roster who His presence was so widely felt. I mean, even though the Giants have certain veterans, you know, guys like Buster Posey and Joe Panic, but Brandon Belt, none of those guys really have been producing over the last few years. And I hate to say it, but, you know, Buster Posey has become one of the most expensive catchers, and he's become basically a defensive replacement. I mean, Stephen Vogt has supplanted him quite a bit, certainly offensively. Posey just doesn't have the numbers anymore to back up playing all the time. So I think that made it a lot easier for guys like Yastrzemski and Dickerson to sort of come in and make an immediate impact, and they've certainly done that. And I just think and you've also seen the resurgence of the Giants through Pablo Sandoval. I mean, this guy was I mean, it's funny how the Giants were able to luck out and get him back after he basically wore out his welcome very quickly in Boston, and he's become a fan favorite again, and he's been, you know, one of the reasons why the Giants are doing so well.
You know what I always think is funny, Ryan, is how we think about the game as media members, or how fans think players are reacting and how they actually do react, because we're thinking, you know, this season it looks like it's over. They're not thinking that way. And also, we're thinking that Madison Bumgarner might be concerned about getting traded. He's saying, no, you know, I don't care about that at all. He's got that super focus that Ryan Vogelsong was talking about. So, you know, how do you look at that? Just the difference between the way everybody else thinks and the way these players think.
You know, I think in the case of a Bumgarner, for instance, I mean, he, you know, even though he doesn't have the same kind of cachet that a Tim Lincecum had in his prime, you know, he obviously is the face of the franchise now, and he's pitched so well, especially over those postseasons. I mean, what he did in 2014 was legendary. And he is a guy that really is also kind of an old school player. I think that's why he and Bochy have such a great chemistry together, and that's certainly something that's going to be missed. But you got to look at it from the Giants management standpoint. I mean, they're probably looking in the rearview mirror and seeing, okay, here's a piece we have that we could use to trade with. What kind of, you know, return could we get with him? And even though the Giants are certainly in contention right now, I mean, how much are they in contention? I mean, right now it's a wild card spot, which basically just gives you, you know, one game you're guaranteed to be playing, and whether or not you're hosting that game or not is if you're the first or the second wild card. So it's a real hard thing to juggle right now. I think the Giants, fortunately for them, they have a few more days. I think what's going to end up happening is we'll have to see how it plays out in San Diego in this next series and see where the Giants are after that series. Now, they're still in the same position they're in now. I got to think the Giants have to stick with who they've got and maybe even be buyers as opposed to being sellers.
I agree there. I mean, I think they'd be crazy to trade Madison Bumgarner right now. That's just how I feel about it, seeing about how they've played. Also, here's the other thing, Ryan. I was thinking about this in a funny way, is that when you're watching a movie and you've got the star of the movie and you're really enjoying it, when they kill off the star in the middle of the movie, man, it just doesn't feel the same. It's something that I don't like to see. Sometimes it works. Like, I've watched a series where they've killed off the main actor, but for the most part, you want that main actor to be there all the way through the movie, don't you?
You know, you do, and the only movie I can think of that comes to mind, the moment you said that instantaneously, that popped into my head, movie that came out about 30 years ago. You remember The Untouchables with Sean Connery and Kevin Costner?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Great movie, right? About
I forgot who died.
Two-thirds of the way through the movie, Sean Connery gets killed. And that changed the movie. The movie was still good towards the end, and Connery was becoming he got the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor, which is fantastic. But that's a good example right there of when you kill off a character, it changes the complexion of the film.
Now, if you kill off a bad character, that's different. Or, you know, what I'm thinking here is 2012 Melky Cabrera, you know, when they continue on without him, things work out great, right? I mean, I think that was 2012, right?
Yeah,
2012. So when it first happened and he's suspended, it's like, man, that's going to kill this team. Instead, that team, you know, played great and they won all the games they needed to win. But in this case, you know, you trade Madison Bumgarner or you trade Will Smith, I don't think it works in a positive way.
No, I agree with you. In fact, the only time I can think of this in baseball where they did kind of a fire sale, I think it was 97, if I'm not mistaken. I think the Chicago White Sox were about six games back, and they themselves as an organization, the players had T-shirts. I forget. They thought they were still in it, but obviously management said, nope, you guys are done. Traded players away. I think this is when the Giants had Keith Falk, and then I can't remember exactly what happened, how that worked out. But if we go back and look in the history books, there was this one year where the White Sox were in contention, and they decided to trade everybody. And I guess management in the end proved out to be right because they just weren't quite there. And the Giants, I think, are in a similar situation, but again, the wild card situation didn't exist like it does now. So, like I said, I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see where this team is after that Padres series. And then, you know, after that, they go on the road again to Philadelphia. So you know, for certain by then, they're going to have to make a decision because the trade deadline comes right during that Philly series.
There are some general managers who look at that wild card and say, you know what, that's a one-game playoff. I don't want to, you know, mortgage the future just based on that one game. But don't you think it's a different, unique situation here? When you've got Bruce Bochy in his last year, you got to give him every chance you can to try to get back to the World Series.
I agree. I think so, too, just because of that very reason that it is his last year. I mean, I think if it was a different manager or maybe you have a different staff, then sure, you could do that because, you know, you can get a huge turnover in baseball immediately. I mean, if you look at it, the Giants back in the 96 season, I remember they were horrible, right? They had Matt Williams and Barry Bonds, but the Giants were a 90-loss team. I mean, that offseason, they end up trading away Matt Williams. They get Jeff Kent, Jose Vizcaino, and JT Snow, all from Matt Williams. And I think they traded away Trinidad Hubbard with Matt Williams. But just goes to show you that when you make the big trade sometimes, you know, you can get immediate dividends. But like you said, though, with a guy like Bumgarner, I mean, you just can't trade away your Robert De Niro acting piece. You know what I mean? He's just that good. You just don't know what you're going to get in return for him. But I will say this. It's hard to say because baseball has changed so much now with the way that, you know, guys are trying to make their mark in the game. I mean, look, for instance, Joe at the All-Star game, right? So many of those guys were, what, under 25 this year? A lot of the older players now are disappearing from the game very quickly just because they can't seem to make an impact anymore. Maybe they can't catch up to the 98-mile-an-hour heat that all these pitchers are bringing. So, you know, a lot of times now in baseball, when you're past 30, they consider you old, and that's why I think Bumgarner's unfortunately in this situation. But as we've seen with him, even though he's had some injuries, I mean, he's been very healthy this season, and he's pitching like the Bumgarner of old.
You know, you get to see all these personalities after the game. It's not always easy to go into a clubhouse, a losing clubhouse. It's a lot more fun when the team wins. But, you know, you think about different personalities, and Ryan Vogelsong was alluding to the fact that Tyler Beattie, you know, he's a really nice guy. He might be too nice at times. You know, he wants to see more of the bulldog mentality. How amazed are you sometimes at how different the personalities are on a baseball team? And it's such a long season, too, and you get to see that contrast of different personalities and different moods.
Yeah, you do see it, but not as much as before. I mean, one of the things that you may have noticed with postgame now is access to the players is very limited. I mean, in this day and age, you know, you're guaranteed to get the manager for sure. The starting pitcher, most of the time, although once in a while, the pitcher may actually even leave, even though he's not supposed to. And then after that, you're lucky to get one other player, and maybe two if you're really lucky. So, you know, you're very limited these days in who's accessible to the media. And this even goes true for the rights holders that, you know, broadcast the games. There's just not a lot of access to players like there used to be, at least in baseball. I'm actually noticing that the NBA still does a great job in making their players available. But that being said, yeah, the Giants have some interesting personalities. I wouldn't say that they're the most colorful group. I mean, that tends to be something that you reserve for the Oakland A's because their players have always been somewhat unconventional. But I just think that the way the team is set up now, you got a lot of guys that are just really hungry to make an impact. And there's not a lot of egos I'm seeing with the team. I think, you know, you could have said that maybe a guy like Pablo Sandoval had a pretty big ego. And again, he got brought back down to earth after he came back from his embarrassing experience in Boston. So I think these guys are just all galvanized with each other. And, you know, probably to be honest, the biggest personality I see in that clubhouse these days has been Bumgarner. I mean, he's been a little bit more animated this season than he has been in the past, probably because he keeps getting all these questions asked to him about potential trades. And it's just great to hear some of his reactions. You know, he'll drop the occasional expletive. He doesn't care. I mean, that's what makes him feel great. I mean, he had that incident with Max Muncy regarding the home run, right? And he even later admitted that he probably overreacted. But he said, I can't change it with who I am. But that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I mean, I think most of the Giants players are very approachable, but I will say this, the veteran players now, they don't hang out at the locker before the game the way they used to. There's not a lot of baseball conversations with reporters the way it used to be before the game. You know, a lot of the newcomers are the guys who will talk to the media, but for some reason, you know, players just don't want to interact as much, it seems to me, with media, and especially because they have the option of just tweeting something out and kind of controlling it.
That's part of it. The teams are also not encouraging their players to make themselves too available. So I that's something you're not just seeing only from the Giants. I think that's a situation throughout baseball and even the other sports. I mean, I know even with basketball, for instance, we'll go back to the NBA. Media is allowed a pregame access period, and a lot of times those players aren't around either. I mean, that's why players, if they do end up meeting with the press, it's usually during pregame shoot-arounds or off-day practices. And with baseball, again, yeah, you just don't see it very much. I talked to a couple of beat writers here and there, and the best time for them to do any kind of interviews is usually on the road. And they have to try to, you know, make these arrangements, you know, usually ahead of time. You know, I don't know if it's weeks ahead of time, but they certainly kind of plan out their strategy as to when to interview someone if they need something for pregame.
All right, Ryan. I'm trying to think of, like, what other Ryan can get. Can I get on the show for this one? I mean, I had Vogelsong, I had Leong. I don't know, Gosling, the actor, since we were talking about movies. Anybody else that I should be getting?
Yeah, no, I don't know. Maybe Ryan Seacrest. He's the most famous Ryan out there that I can think of right now, but I don't think he knows too much about baseball. So maybe you can ask him about the Billboard Top 20 or something.
Nolan Ryan, that would be
Nolan
good.
Ryan. Sure,
I
of course.
Tap
but
that off.
But then his last name, yeah. But but no, that's great. I mean, Vogie was a great guy for the Giants. I mean, he's certainly someone who really earned his stripes. I mean, he had a really tough career, as you know, when he first came up with the Giants. Had this great arm, and then he had some problems. You know, gets traded to Pittsburgh. What ends up going back to Japan and then kind of finds himself and then comes back to the Giants, becomes a two-time All-Star and a two-time World Series champion. So, I mean, that was a great ending for his career.
No doubt. All right, Ryan, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. See you at the ballpark soon.
Okay, thank you, Joe, for having me on.
That's baseball reporter Ryan Leong. I want to thank him and Ryan Vogelsong for joining us here on Inside China Basin. Join us again next week for another podcast. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening on thesportsvirus.com.